Hier ist noch eine. Okay. Wieso?
Today we went through the first three chapters. We identified gaps still in the first four chapters. We recognize that still, especially policy gaps, we made some progress in the sense that we were able to discuss the aspects relating to health, and I believe we at least managed to resolve the policy issues there. I think there's interesting work within government to look at the whole area of concurrent function. And I think the challenge, especially the social sector, is most affected with some of the challenges there. But hopefully that work will eventually, give a clearer framework on how this concurrency should function, such that there's certainty as to how to delineate responsibilities between the different spheres. But I suppose that's for the long term. But at least we did discuss the issue of delegation versus other ways of conferring responsibilities to, in respect of implementation of national legislation to other spheres of government. So hopefully, if there's anything new there, we'll entertain that. But for now, I think we'll work with what we've got. Now, the next chapter that we're dealing with is chapter 5, and that is, what we'll do is at the end of the bill, we'll go back to those chapters where there were still issues that needed to be finalized, and hopefully by then we will have found solutions on formulation. We're going to strive to move very fast today. We're not going to have lengthy debates and discussions about policy issues. We will concentrate more on trying to get technical formulation correct. And that's the general approach that we'll take. All right, so chapter 5, which used to be chapter 4, is community-based services, or deals with community-based services. Legal services, do you want to take us through that?
Chapter 5 reads as follows, community-based services. Guidelines for community-based services. The Minister, in consultation with the National Youth Commission, National House of Traditional Leaders, the South African Police Service, and Ministers of Education, Arts and Culture, Health, Provincial and Local Government, Sports and Recreation, must develop guidelines for the establishment of community-based services in the Republic, with special emphasis on underserviced areas. The Minister and other ministers involved in community
services. Are we all together? All right. You'll notice that the first sub-clause is deleted and being substituted by a new sub-clause 1. Maybe to make it easier, you should just give us a few notes in advance, or warnings in advance, as to what is the main change that has been put in here in a few words and what the rationale behind that change is, so that we don't struggle first to see it and get detracted from focusing on the actual formulation. Just give us the principle behind the changes, the main changes in that chapter, and then we can proceed with looking at it.
Chair, you'll recall that during the public hearings there was an indication that it was almost the chairperson, the committee was indicating that what we are providing for in the bill is almost like a blank check, where we are not providing any details in the bill itself, but rather saying the minister would have to come up with regulations. It was then agreed that we need to go and try and put more details. If you look at the previous chapter, it only dealt with community-based services, but it didn't have provision for guidelines for such services. It did not provide in details for the establishment and provision of community-based services. So we've tried to add more details in respect of the establishment and also the guidelines for how community-based services are to be rendered, as opposed to the original draft where we confined ourselves mostly to the minister prescribing regulations and how these services are to be rendered.
In this instance, at least, the minister was prescribing conditions. But the other point, which is the essence of clause, the old clause 10, was the fact that it was saying that the minister must establish this community-based service, and the concern was the very nature of community-based services are such that they wouldn't be established by the minister. Otherwise, they wouldn't be community-based services. They'd probably be government services. But all right. So let's go through what you're then proposing to put forward to us. Okay?
Sure. I'm now moving to sub-clause 2. The minister and other ministers involved. Okay.
Develop guidelines to establish a community-based service in the Republic. What's in the Republic got to do with it?
Have I got the wrong one now?
Yeah. Timber, of course, he gave me the wrong version.
No, it is correct. Wait. It does say that.
Wait. Hey. Oh, yeah, in the Republic.
Well, I think we shouldn't have referred to in the Republic, because in any case, the bill is supposed to apply within the Republic, so we just leave out in the Republic.
Yeah. But all right, let's go. I suppose maybe let's go clause by clause in this chapter, and then we can just reflect on the chapter as a whole.
Okay. The sub-clause 2, the minister and other ministers involved in community-based services must, for their respective departments, prescribe national norms and standards for community-based services. Prescribe the type of community-based services and the manner in which such services must be provided. On page 33, sub-clause 3, the MEC must, in consultation with the relevant provincial departments, develop an integrated provincial strategy for community-based services. The MEC must, in consultation with the MEC for health, education, sports and recreation, safety and security, local government, and from monies appropriated by the provincial legislature for that purpose, fund community-based services for the province. Community-based services rendered by a non-governmental organization will qualify for funding from monies appropriated by the provincial legislature if it complies with the registration requirements contemplated in Section 12. The community-based strategy must target children and youth who are in and out of school, people with disabilities, older persons, families, and communities in both rural and urban areas. Community structures must be involved and participate in the rendering of community-based services. Clause 13. Must we stop the chair?
Yeah, I think it will be easier so that we can engage with a clause. And, yeah. I read it, essentially the operative word is that in sub 1, we deal with the setting of guidelines for the establishment of community-based service. In sub 2, we talk about regulating this services through norms and standards. And regulating what type of community-based services and the manner in which the services must be rendered. And in sub 3, we're saying that the MEC must develop a strategy in the province. And then in 4, the MEC must fund the services. Now, I just want to get an understanding of the underlying policy that informs this key operative words. Are we in the first instance saying what we're saying, that the minister must establish guidelines for the establishment? I'm not sure what the guidelines will relate to, as opposed to 2, when we're saying norms and standards. Aren't the norms and standards themselves going to set the guidelines for the establishment of the services and the rendering thereof? But sub B of sub 2 talks about prescribe the type of community-based services and the manner in which such services must be provided. What was the rationale behind this? Because it is easy to come up with words, but what is the actual intention? What is the full intention behind this word? Because they are very nature community-based services are supposed to be less government control, if you like, of the service. All you need is to create a regulated environment within which the services are rendered, but not take the lead and control. I appreciate the fact that at least we've dropped the old subclause 1, which envisaged the minister to actually establish them, which was worse. But Chief Director, from a policy level, can you just explain to us what went behind the conceptual thinking? And just finally, on 4, the MEC must fund the services. It's a must fund them. So it means that there is an obligation to fund. Will the provinces have the resources, unlimited resources, to fund the services whenever they are established? Because the clause doesn't qualify the obligation. It simply says must fund them. We all go and set up our little community-based services. We submit our plans, and you say, no, this is the norms and standards. And then we say, fine, that's exactly what we wanted to hear. Now, here is the budget. Send an invoice. Fund them. If you refer Or am I missing something somewhere? I don't know, colleagues, if you want to raise any. All right.
Chair, yes, thank you, Chair. MEC 34, MEC May. I suppose that will address the chairperson's concern, chairperson. In terms of 12.1, chairperson, we see guidelines. Guidelines are not compelling, but you provide a broad framework according to which services ought to be provided. And not all of them will have norms and standards. So the guidelines might be much broader than norms and standards. Norms and standards are a compliance issue, that once you've developed those guidelines, from those guidelines, then you can determine areas for which you want to determine norms and standards. And also the type of community-based services. If you look at what we were proposing in terms of treatment, for instance, it's not something that you can just go and do. You need to have some understanding of what are the areas that you'll be dealing with, who are the other partners involved, how do they link into the whole program. So it doesn't necessarily have talk about norms and standards, but it just looks at what type of services ought to be provided in that particular community and the manner in which that they have to be provided. In the legislation, we've made provision for coordinated and services to be provided within the community. You'd need to give a sense of how those coordinated services need to be provided within that particular community so that we don't clog the system. We don't have enough treatment centers at the moment. So we want to create treatment facilities, with treatment services within the community for those people that actually don't need, they can benefit from a program that is community-based and that includes diversion programs. So this is what we had in mind. But the guidelines are just broad for everybody in consultation with the other stakeholders, the National Service, the police, all the other ministers as stipulated. Thank you.
Approach in terms of how the minister's role is defined in relation to the services. Is this the kind of model approach that is applied in respect of the other areas? I'm just raising the question of consistency in the manner in which we conceptualize the role of government vis-a-vis the role of the private sector, guidelines on the one level, a regulatory framework at another level, funding at another level. Some instances is the national minister that funds, and in other instances is the MEC that funds. Have we worked through all of that throughout the bill, and we now clear that this is how we're delineating the core functions in relation to these different responsibilities between the different role players? Are we now comfortable with that?
Chair, I think we really made a serious attempt to look at it, and of course we'll be guided by the committee, Chair, but we really made an attempt. And in terms of community-based services, you'd understand that those community-based services are provided for at a local level. So funding would have to come from the MECs, for welfare services in particular. They would have to be coming from the MEC for social development. The MEC can then, I think, jointly with the local or the municipalities decide how they want to render services, or what is the role of the municipality and what is it. There are also drug action committees that will, and provincial drug action committees that will be provincial substance abuse forum that will be advising the minister. But at the end of the day, it's still us who actually render, who fund, and we fund NGOs that is out there, particularly at community-based level. I mean, with HIV and AIDS, those are funded by, not by municipalities, but more by the MEC for Social Development.
And that's all right. But we don't mention local government here, do we? In terms of any role. Subsection?
Chair, we have it in subsection 4, local government and some minister purposes. The ministers will consult with the Department of Local Government.
In terms of consultation that the MEC must provide. Right, members, you have any comments or questions on the clause? All right. Okay, yes, Legal Services.
So on page 32, subclause 2, I'm suggesting that after, say, the minister and the ministers and other ministers involved in the community-based services must, for their respective departments, prescribe. I'm suggesting that after the minister and other ministers, we can just refer to in subsection 1, because I think it refers to the ministers referred to in subsection 1 of 10, instead of
yeah, I was wondering which are the other ministers.
And then after those ministers, I'm suggesting that you need to remove involved in community-based services because it will be the same ministers referred to in subsection 1. And
I was also wondering what involved in community-based services as a criterion actually means.
Okay. And you see at the end of that sentence, there is a must. I'm suggesting that we need to insert a comma. And then must for their respective departments, comma, prescribe. And then if you go to 2A, at the end of 2A, I'm suggesting that you need to have a semicolon and then end. And on B, remove the prescribe because it's already indicated at the end of clause 2. Ends with clause, before you go to paragraph 8, there's prescribed already, so you should actually read from there that you don't have to repeat prescribing sub clause B. I'm not sure
what the only tricky thing that I see is that how do the other ministers prescribe under this act? Are you going to have justice regulations published by the Minister of Justice under this act as such, for example, if the Minister of Justice is one of the other ministers. How do you see it working?
Can
different ministers at different times decide now I'm going to set up under some?
Well, I think, Chair, the best thing would be if they do so in consultation, then you know that they can do it collectively. Unlike where another minister is sitting somewhere, coming up with their own minimum norms and standards, which may not necessarily agree with the minimum norms and standards on with another department on the same matter, although there may be some minor differences. I'm saying so, Chair, in the light of our discussion yesterday on similar clauses.
Chair,
can
I respond to this?
Yeah.
So if you look at, for instance, the Department of Justice, and in terms of diversion programs that we might have, and if, for instance, a person diverted to a community-based treatment service by the courts, there should be some guidelines or norms and standards, perhaps, that would have to be indicated by the Department of Justice in terms of how those kinds of services must be provided. That was the thinking, whether we've captured this correctly or not, that's another story, but that was the thinking behind this, that each department would really have to look at how then it provides for those kinds of services. That it's not the minister, as my colleague says, that actually does prescribe, because he doesn't come to competence to do that.
You see, I don't want a situation where, in relation to community-based services, which relate specifically to is it the provision of treatment, what do these community-based services relate
to? All the services.
It's what?
They provide all the services except reintegration services, because they don't need to be reintegrated into the community. They are already within the community, so their treatment
program. I'm trying to prevent a proliferation of various regulatory dispensations in respect of the same function, essentially, happening. Because we mustn't take this notion a little too. We must avoid running the risk of taking this notion a little too far. These community-based services, we should see them as a specific program in itself. Because it's not like we're looking at community-based services such as sports training programs, cultural programs, and so on. It's programs that are very much closely linked to substance abuse, and the principal, of course, is the Minister of Social Development. Now, if we're going to have a situation where we're going to say all these ministers will each come with their own set of regulations, and they're all over the place, published at different times, and suddenly this community-based programs must now try and find out what the Minister of Justice is saying, what the Minister of Health is saying, and try and pull it all together. You'd recall, for example, during the budget discussions, Ms. Weber said that here is a community, they want to start an early childhood development center. They go to social development says, now, when it comes to health compliance, you must go to health. Make an application in terms of for the norms and standards on health. And then they are told, no, as far as other things, you must go to this. So people end up moving from one office to the other. When we could have a single set of norms and standards that are contained in one single instrument, but relate to health compliance, relate to this compliance and that compliance, they could be all done in terms of one law. You see, so I'm just saying that we should be careful not to take certain things to the extreme. You know. I would have thought that what we would be saying is that the minister would develop norms and standards in consultation with the other ministers. And then, to the extent that, for example, the licensing of a community center to provide treatment, for example, that's something that would have to be done in terms of health regulations anyway. Under the Health Act, because that's how they have to be registered for purposes of that specific function of detoxification. That is obvious. But for purposes of guidelines, norms and standards to establish a treatment, then say that each of these ministers must come up with their own separate norms and standards that must then, which could be developed at different times, not talk to each other, and those kind of things. I don't know if what I'm saying makes sense.
Jefferson, would you rather...
What is the current system? You have a booklet that you showed me the other day. Doesn't it deal holistically with norms and standards currently in relation to the running of treatment centers, for example?
Can we put in consultation, Chair? I think we're open to address this. Can we put the minister in consultation with other ministers involved in community-based services must then? Because then it plays the responsibility on the minister. I'm just trying to find a way that you to capture what you are saying, Chairperson, and I would think we need assistance in that regard. Because the understanding from the committee, from our side, from the committee, was that you can't expect the Minister of Social Development to develop norms and standards also for the other departments. So we're open to guidance from the committee.
One or two things. I'd like to know at this stage, I'm thinking back at the Children's Act, when there was a joint meeting between us and Justice. Now that we make mention of so many departments, up to the point that we mentioned them there, has there been any consultation amongst them? Have they made input? Because if we expect people to take part in this kind of law, then we must get the buy-in from them. We can't talk about them in absentia. So I'd like to know, perhaps in my absence, there was a joint meeting, or if not with us, certainly with the minister of our minister. I just want some clarification. Because if that has not happened, what we are saying here is a pipe dream. You know how difficult other departments can be. You know what hell we got from Delange and the entire justice section. So I would like to be assured that this is not much ado about nothing.
Yes, department.
Okay.
Maybe I can just also mention that with the children's bill, there was a drafting team that was put together in which different departments participated as members of the drafting team. So the very process of drafting it was a multi-sectoral effort. So the provisions relating to justice were drafted by somebody from justice as part of that team. But of course they also had the advantage that the whole work was referred to the Law Review Commission, which brought in quite a wide-ranging capacity to the Law Review Commission at the time, which brought in turn wide-ranging capacity from academia to civil society NGOs that specialize in different fields, whether it's adoption work or other work. So the whole process was the product of that kind of intersectoral team as such. I'm not sure how this one was evolved. Smart claims that it was involved at some stage initially, and when this bill was finalized, they were not part of it. I don't know which other organizations may have been involved, but yes, the question is departments. Which other departments were actively involved in the drafting?
The departments were involved in the consultative process earlier in the bill when the bill was drafted, and it was circulated to all the departments again for comments. Following that, it went to the cluster, the JCPS cluster. Inputs were made around by the JCPS cluster on this. It also went to the social cluster, the technical social cluster. So input was given.
They were consulted, not constituted part of the draft. Essentially, it was a bill drafted by social development that consulted the other departments, which could be affected.
I don't know, Chair. There was a drafting team, as I indicated, Chairperson, that it was involved in the drafting of the bill. It was interdepartmental and also include. There was a drafting team, sorry, ma'am, that was interdepartmental, that was involved in the drafting of the bill. And that team actually worked on the bill itself, together with NGOs as well that are involved, both SANCA, Bonabo Smart, and the other. Then it went, as I indicated, to the JCPS and to the social cluster. And inputs that were given, they were also considered by an intersectional team. And that was at the drafting stage where the service provider there was a service provider assisting us in that regard. In terms of the cabinet, again, it was approved by cabinet, but the only departments that gave input, and that we discussed with the officials in those particular government departments, were sports and the Department of Health. I'm not sure which other department. The South African Police Services. They were also involved in all these areas. The person you do also remember that we discussed the issue of community when the DG was here for justice was here, we discussed the issue of community-based treatment. And he did indicate that we can't follow the route of drug courts because we don't have the capacity in the province, in the country to establish separate courts. And there are, again, specialist courts. And therefore, he said, he indicated to us that we can use the existing courts to be able to provide these kinds of services. We indicated to the committee as well that we consulted with the Department of Health concerning the utilization of primary health care centers for community-based services, and they are in agreement with us. SAPS is already doing work. We had a full consultation again on the engagement on the bill going close by close. With all the departments, in fact, in a two-day workshop after we had initially briefed this committee. And they assisted us in terms of drafting and giving an indication of which areas they will take responsibility for and what they are already doing in different communities. This was then incorporated into the app. The issue around community-based services, this was drafted on the basis of input that we received from the public hearings and from the committee, and it was done at very, very short notice. It's one of the things was that was given attention over the weekend. So we didn't have an opportunity to go back to all the departments and say to them, but it was based on the discussions that were already held with those departments when we discuss the bill with them. Thank you, Chair.
This satisfies my concern. But my other concern is perhaps I'm slow on the uptake. Pardon my age and my rate of picking up things. I try to read this and I don't get, pardon my slang, the hang of the story. It maybe regeneration.
Yeah, I have a similar concern, and I'm going to raise it soon after you've made your point.
Yes, this is the point I'm trying to make. And I'm trying to say, giving them over the weekend to finish this may have been a mistake on our part. This bill is going to be around for very many years. As new people come onto the scene, they will have to learn the tricks of the trade. And perhaps much later, I'm speaking figuratively, when things begin to fall through the cracks, it is going to reflect on us if we don't do the correct thing and try to rush through this bill and the indication by Ms. Keller that they had no time to go back and consult because everything happened over the weekend. I wonder whether that was the right route to follow. I don't put the blame on them, but I'm saying, were we being fair to push it that fast to an extent that it resulted in the exclusion of people who will be part and parcel of this bill, and that is the various departments.
Wow. To say that it's something, it's an instruction that was given effectively last week, Thursday, would be a bit of an exaggeration, because these matters have been raised and emerged throughout the process, and the understanding was never that we're going to go through the whole bill and at the end, and only at the end of that process, say, okay, we're done, department, you can go back and start only now to reconceptualize issues and to reformulate. Our understanding has always been that as we go along and we identify gaps in the legislation, the department would go back, relook at issues. One accepts that for the duration of their being here and us engaging them, there isn't really much time to conceptualize, to consult, to draft, right? But you would know that since we started with the bill, first at the time of the informal consultation, and we already then identified some of these gaps, the impression we were given was that they had started to work on the gaps we've identified in the meantime. And this dates back to the time when they did an informal presentation before the hearings. And then, of course, did a formal presentation. Before the hearings and before the introduction. And then they did a formal presentation after the introduction, before the hearing. And then, of course, we went through the issues again in the process of looking at public inputs, etc. So there's been various stages at which issues were identified and opportunity was created for things to be re-looked at. And one would have expected that in between there would have been work, ongoing work, to try and address some of the challenges. So I just thought we needed to bring that to the equation. But the second point I wanted to make is a follow-up on your concern that you're not getting the hang of this. I'm more looking at the hang of this chapter specifically, as to what is it exactly that we are creating. The text of the original bill, of course, and didn't really say what this community, to count them is 2, 4, 6, 7 lines on community-based services. And we said, surely, it can make sense that we're establishing a whole area, and that's all we can say about it. What kind of community-based services are we talking about? How do we plan to regulate them, etc.? And why community-based services? How different are they from the services rendered, I don't know where else, because the suggestion is that the others are not being rendered in the community, so they're rendered elsewhere away from the community. But in terms of content, how different are those services to the services rendered in the community? Now, the explanation that was given was that the location of the services is important, because of the where they are located, they tend to be marginalized, not provided support, etc. But even the nature of the service they render, by virtue of being in the community, has certain unique features. Mainly to do with proximity between the service and, like, for example, they tend to be day services because people can walk in and walk out, go back home, etc. But I don't know whether now in this text, because I asked the chief director, what services do these community-based services provide? And she said all the services. Now, is it something that's in the bill? And what does all the services actually mean? Have we spelled it out? So maybe we'll get to that point and get clarity. Yeah, yes, who else? All right, let me first get Mr. Vivius, and then I'll come back to you, Chief Director.
Chairperson, maybe just as add on to what Ms. Kira said and what you have raised yourself, It seems to be a brand new service that we want to introduce, but it's not really true. These kind of community-based services have been rendered over many years. I think this chapter is more attempt to structure the services and to coordinate these efforts, because the schools and the communities, the police, Department of Health, Department of Social Development, they are all contributing somehow, to a lesser or to a larger extent, to a community-based service targeting people affected by substance abuse. So if you go through the whole chapter, you basically see we try to structure it. I think the biggest problem in the past was that it was maybe services being rendered more sometimes on an ad hoc basis and by a specific sector. If we can just be mindful of that, because it seems as a brand new service, but it's not really a new service.
Right, Chief Director.
I think Pierre has stolen my thunder, Chairperson. But again, just to indicate, Chairperson, that as this bill evolved, it went to cabinet. The clusters removed some of the things that were in the bill. The cabinet removed some of the things that were in the bill, and said, you know, so it's evolved over a period and at every different stage, there were feelings that this doesn't belong, this belongs, this doesn't belong, this belongs. So, Chair, it's really been a difficult process for us, but to take your point.
I think if at any point there's some sense of clarity as to what exactly are the kind of services we envisage to be rendered there, as he's saying it somewhere along the way in the chapter, I suppose we'll get to it, then we can assess at the end of the chapter whether the package that's being put here is adequate.
Can I propose that at least maybe once, just go through the chapter. Just go through the chapter.
I
so that when we comment, at least we have
an overview. A full picture.
Of what the chapter is saying, and then we should then look at
approach in the first. It would have made us faster as well. All right. Okay. Let's go through the entire chapter, and then come back and see if there's any need to improve. Yeah. We're talking about the new chapter 5, which deals with community-based services. We've just gone through the first sub-clause, page 33. Yeah, it starts at page 32, and now we're getting to the next clause, which is clause 13 at page 33. Please proceed. Make sure that they receive the correct. Can we make sure that they get the correct version? Yeah, I think they must simply give you the correct version. They call a complete version.
Of community-based services. The MEC, after consultation with the departments referred to in Section 12.4 and local municipalities, must facilitate the establishment of community-based services in collaboration with the relevant departments referred to on Subsection 1 and local municipalities, may provide or fund community-based services from funds appropriated by the provincial legislature for that purpose. 34, subsection 3, community-based services referred to in section 6 of this act must A, be managed and maintained in accordance with this act and comply with the prescribed norms and standards contemplated in section 6.1 and such other requirements as may be prescribed. Community-based services must include community-based treatment programs subject to sections 29, 32, and 35 of this Act. Establish or utilize existing facilities and infrastructure, including primary health care centers, to provide integrated community-based treatment programs. Consist of a multidisciplinary team consisting of a social worker, professional nurse, and any other mental health care practitioner registered with the relevant statutory body. Provide professional and lay support within the home environment and establish recreational, cultural, and sports activities to divert young people from substance abuse. Clause 14, registration of community-based services. No person may provide community-based services unless the services is registered in terms of this section. Any person who wishes to provide a community-based service must apply to the HOD for the registration of such service. Page 35, subclause 3, the minister must prescribe conditions for the registration of community-based services, including application for registration, approval of registration, temporary registration, withdrawal, and termination of registration. Registration granted in terms of this section is not transferable to another person. If the provider of a service for any reason intends to stop providing the service, the provider must, prior to stopping the service in question, notify the HOD of the intention and the implication of such stoppage for the affected persons. Inform the persons affected of the intended stoppage of the service and take reasonable steps to ensure that the persons benefiting from the service are not adversely affected or put at risk and, where appropriate, are referred to a person providing similar services. A person who renders a community-based service that has not been registered in terms of the section is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for both, for a period not exceeding 12 months, or to both a fine and such imprisonment. Clause 15, management structure of community-based services. Management structure must be established for each community-based service. Page 36, the minister may prescribe guidelines for the functioning and composition of management structures. Election, appointment, qualification, terms of office, and grounds for removal from office of members of the structure, and number of and procedure at meetings of a management structure. The management structure established in terms of section 1, subsection 1, must ensure that it provides quality service, it creates opportunities for training of staff, it applies sound financial management principles, there is proper and effective management of services, and appropriate complaint mechanisms and procedures are in place. Clause 16, persons providing community-based services. Any person who provides community-based services must ensure that service providers receive their prescribed training. All social workers and healthcare providers must be registered with the appropriate statutory council responsible for the relevant profession. Any person who contravenes or fails to comply with the provision of this section is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 12 months or to both a fine and such imprisonment. That's the end of the chapter, sir.
Do you want to go back and address me on the question of the full range of community-based services that you envisage to be provided by community-based services? Is this clause, clause 14, establishment of community-based services, that clause, essentially defining what services, community-based services, will render. In the value chain of services from prevention to including treatment to aftercare, etc., where exactly do community-based services actually fit? Does it fit in with all of them? Because I seem to have understood you to be saying that. Or are they limited to the specific type of services here? And what is the relationship between what is said in 3 and 4 and the specific types of services that the other chapters in this bill deal with?
It's subsection.
For example, subsection 4 talks specifically to treatment, community-based treatment programs. And treatment in the context of this bill is a specific type of service out of the range of various services that the legislation deals with, unless I understand it differently. But of course, it refers to a number of clauses. I'm not sure what those clauses do, but maybe you'll clarify further.
Chair, if you look at three of 13, which relates to the establishment of and provision of community-based services, Section 3 says services, it refers to community-based services that are referred to in Section 6 of this Act. And in this case, it's actually, it should be Section 5, Chairperson. I think it's just the cross-referencing that is mentioned. Section 5 of the Act. And these are prevention services, early intervention services, treatment services, and aftercare, and whatever services. But I think drawing from the other chapters that are referred to here, Chairperson, I'm not sure about the cross-referencing, Chairperson. Section 29, it deals with how people should be, can be, let me just check. The old 29. The old 29. If you look at the old 29 on page 57, Chairperson, that old 29, it still deals with the issue of admission of involuntary service user to a treatment center. Now, we're saying that admission of an involuntary service user may be within a community-based treatment service. Because it doesn't mean that if that user is involuntary, that it means that he's violent or anything. He still can benefit with certain conditions that may be imposed by the magistrate to benefit from treatment within a community-based service. The old, and so there's no difference in terms of how involuntary service users might be committed, but this section provides them to be committed to a community-based treatment center. Page 62, Chairperson, that refers to the old 32, which is also about committal of a person to a treatment center after a conviction. And this talks to a court convicting a person of any offense, may in addition and in lieu of any sentence in respect of such offense, order that such person be committed to a treatment center. And that treatment center could be a community-based service. For example, a child who has stolen something, a person can be committed to the community-based treatment and be ordered to go to the treatment center every day or whatever, until that they have attended to, or rather the addiction.
So that's the old 32 and the new 36.
Yes.
All right.
And then also in lieu of a center, those kinds of things. We're not deviating from what is proposed in terms of center-based treatment centers, but we're just making provision for community-based services to be provided. Instead of people being sent to community involuntary service users, it's being sent to treatment facilities or residential treatment facilities. And this is what the Department of Justice also alluded to when they were here, to say it can be done and they can provide the framework for that within the courts for them to be able to do that kind of service. It will require a lot of work from both the Department and the Department of Justice, because then you need people that are going to monitor the service and ensure that those people comply with the conditions of their sentence or an order by the magistrate.
Community-based service means services provided to persons who use, abuse, or are dependent on substances, and to persons affected by substance abuse while remaining within their families and communities.
While remaining in their families and communities is the operative word, and that's what defines a community-based that otherwise, for all intents and purposes, a community-based service is essentially, could essentially either be a treatment center or any of the other specific services or facilities specified in the different chapters, and would render statutory and non-statutory, what would render all the various services expressly provided for in the legislation, ranging from, you know, social development tends to say statutory when they're referring actually to services that usually have had the involvement of the courts, such as the involuntary committal of users. Is that the conceptual understanding, basically, or is there anything else that one needs to understand in understanding what community-based services are and are not? Mr. Pierre, yes?
Chairperson, you also mentioned a treatment center. We basically feel when you remove a person out of his community and you put him in an institution, whether it's a prison environment or whether it's an inpatient treatment, residential treatment program, then you are acting, then that is not community-based anymore. Although such a facility may be in the community, but you are removing that person from his home environment. So we don't really define that kind of institutions as part of a community-based sort of intervention.
So the that's why I'm saying the operative word is that they must stay within the community and within their family, as opposed to being sent away for an extended period of time to an institution, irrespective of the location of that institution, as Mr. Pierre Vivier has said. All right. Any other questions in relation to this chapter? Yeah.
About remaining within that community. That community is the undesirable environment responsible for the abuse, substance abuse. So if you keep them there, what is the hope of winning them from substances that they abuse?
Well, what I could say, though, is that when we did our rounds last year, we did visit, amongst others, the community-based center in Atlan, where we went. I think it was Atlan. No, here in the Western Cape. Mitchell's Plain. All right. And there were programs that were running there, and it was clear that those young people would come into the center and move back in the community. Maybe the advantage there was that you don't create an artificial environment over an extended period of time and then let them get used to that artificial environment, and then when they have become sober and everything, after a period you then plant them back into the same community, because that is even more risky, because there will be the shock element. Whereas if they stay in the community and come for treatment and go back, you are also able to assess on a daily basis the effect of the treatment and how they will be able to cope when they are in the community and off the treatment. So I think that is the one advantage there. But your point is still relevant, because can we really change the material conditions within the community that led to them in the first place ending up in the treatment center? That's why we said prevention will right, yeah, Ms. Keller.
Just a portion of this list, I think my colleague did not include, in terms of support groups, because we've provided for support groups in community-based services and also in treatment facilities. In reintegration, after care reintegration services. These clauses read, it was supposed to be close to, I don't know the arrangement, I think my colleague will assist with it. But what we're envisaging, maybe I should just read it first, to say the service users and persons affected by substance abuse may establish self-help or mutual support groups to share information, experiences, resolving mutual problems, and providing hope to substance abusers and those affected by substance abuse. Support groups may be established at community level by professional, non-governmental organization, or group of service users or persons affected by substance abuse, by substances. Support groups may be opened to any person, in other words, it can be an open support group or confined to a specific group, and participation to such groups is voluntary. What we are trying to do here, Chairperson, is that those people, even the people in the community, if you are parents of children that abuse, if your children abuse, you can form a group of parents together to come in to actually sit down and discuss the problems relating to children and share your experiences and ways of dealing with children that are abusing substances. If it's children of parents that abuse substances, they could also come together and talk about it and learn from each other and share with each other, whether then that can be led, for instance, by a professional who can assist in doing that. But I think my colleague perhaps forgot to put it in. But it's part of that kind of engagement within a community, and I know there are quite a number of these support groups in the Western Cape. But these are support groups, for instance, like the AA, there's all non, all narcotics, and they are already existing. There are many of them, but some of them they are just for friends of people that are abusing substances that want to assist maybe another friend who is abusing substances. But we've included that section. It's a very, very small section with three sub clauses. Thank
you. The drafters want to respond to that, and can we be favored with copies of whatever texts that are being put forward so that we can have it in front of us and look at it as an approach? I see nobody has laptops in front of them, nobody has printers in front of them. Tomorrow we're supposed to be voting on this bill. The modus operandi seems to be a little bit worrying. People are using pens and papers. Is it in front of somebody? All right.
But can I respond to?
Yes.
The issue around support groups is actually catered for on page 55. The reason why we did not put it there is that we thought we shouldn't, in respect of each and every service, make provision for support groups. But just make a general provision that provides for the establishment of support groups. So it is actually catered for, except that it is not necessarily located where Ms. Keller would have preferred it to be located, but it actually caters for all people who are either service users or they are affected by substance abuse. And it's on page 55 and 56, plus 31. Page 55, clause 31, and it also goes into page 56.
And the sufficient linkage between the notion of support groups and the, I don't know if there's a need for that, but. Yes.
I'm concerned by you saying we are voting tomorrow. There's no way we are going to vote on this tomorrow. And secondly, when we've been dealing with substance abuse treatment, and it's only proper, I think, rightly or wrongly, that support groups are part of the treatment and therefore must come under treatment. We follow it logically.